If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Hello and welcome into the Sunday edition of the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm Tim Dennison for Dave Schrader. Today has a day off today. We have a great program today as we're going to welcome in a longtime friend of the show. Katrina Weinman is in today from Paranormal Lockdown. Of course, the huge show over on Destination America. She is the co-host of that show along with Nick Groff. And it's become hugely successful, folks, proving once again that you don't have to be known for just one show. Katrina and Nick, of course, coming from two separate, hugely popular properties, coming together and now in their third season over on Paranormal Lockdown and going gangbusters over there. That third season now has 4 shows out as of this week and coming up next week on Tuesday, 2 more shows coming out. And that show, like I said, going gangbusters. Nick Groff has a series of trips that he's doing. NickGroffTour.com is where you want to go if you want to go investigating with Nick. And you can learn some stuff about paranormal investigating straight from Nick by going to NickGroffTour.com. I tell you, the show is amazing. I love the show, Paranormal Lockdown. I love watching both Nick and Katrina investigate, and they do a lot of things when they investigate the same way that I would like to investigate as well. So I love watching the two of them investigate, and love the way they tackle the paranormal. We're going to get into some conversation with Katrina and pick her brain here on how she investigates and get some behind-the-scenes look at Paranormal Lockdown this season and compare and contrast with different seasons and how her and Nick have grown together. We're going to do that here in just a moment. And now, as promised, folks, formerly of Paranormal State, now with Paranormal Lockdown on Destination America, here is, as a reporter who's now 90 years old in Minneapolis would say, my close personal friend, here's Katrina Weidman. Hi, Katrina. How you doing?
Hi, Timmy. I'm good. How are you?
Doing fine. You know, I think I speak for all the watchers, the fans of your show by saying, it's about time you guys are on in America. What was up with Europe that they were so special that they got to see season 3 of your show first?
Yeah. Unfortunately, this was sort of how it worked out this year. You know, it's no secret that Discovery went through a merger with another network. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it didn't affect the UK the same way it affected us. So we were just, you know, they were waiting for the right place and right time to air us in the US.
Now, it's a little bit of a secret or no secret. I don't think have we had you or Nick on since Paranormal Lockdown started? I don't think we have we?
I think right when it started, I came on.
That's right. You did. Okay. So right as it started.
Yeah.
Now, so we have a little bit of catching up to do as far as that goes.
Yeah.
I know there's been quite a bit of growth, but let's start first with, the chemistry between you and Nick? Now, when you first got together, I know it was a pretty good fit. Is it still a good fit between you and Nick? I know I'm asking for juicy gossip here, but how have you two grown together? As, not only as investigators, but as friends? How's that teamwork going there?
Good. You know, Nick has always felt like a big brother to me. Mm-hmm. As I think, like, the first time we talked, it was just like this instant connection. We had been through very similar things in our personal and professional career, in our personal lives and professional careers. So we just instantly kind of hit it right off the bat. And, you know, obviously as you work longer with people, you just get to know them better and the bond grows. So we've always had that good kind of, you know, friendship between us.
I know it's interesting too, because you work also behind the scenes in film. Nick is a filmmaker, and there's got to be some creativity there between the two of you as well that meshes. Tell me a little bit about artistically how the two of you jive, and do you also get along in the same wavelength there?
What was that last part?
Do you get along on the same wavelength creatively as far as filmmaking goes? Do you talk a lot about filmmaking together?
We do. Well, we both like horror movies, so we'll talk about that kind of stuff. And I think we both have like a dark sense of humor, so we will chat about that kind of stuff. But you know, as far as like the look and feel of the show, that I really don't have anything to do with that. Mm-hmm. I wish I could take credit for it, but I can't. You know, that's, you know, Nick and Rob, really, because Rob's the showrunner and director and co-executive producer. Nick is also the executive producer along with his cousin Justin. So, you know, they're really responsible for how everything looks and feels as far as the artistic side of the show goes. So, unfortunately, I can't put my name on that one.
Now, let me ask you this. There's a difference in investigating, definitely, between what you were doing with Paranormal State and what you're doing now with Paranormal Lockdown, and even in the way you investigate with locking down for an extended amount of time. Tell me how that affects you specifically, because I know with Paranormal State, you would go in, you do multiple shoots, you'd go in and out from a location, you'd get time to kind of back away. With Paranormal Lockdown, you're there, you're focused. Not really an opportunity to get away from what it is you're doing. Tell me how that affects you in both in good and bad ways.
I mean, I think we'll start with the good. Excuse me. There is definitely the craziest experiences that I cannot explain have happened while I've been working on Paranormal Lockdown. I had experiences for sure working on Paranormal State. I've had experiences doing private investigations, doing even public ghost hunts. You know, I've always had experiences, but the craziest stuff I've had has been on lockdown. And, you know, it makes me really wonder if there's something to do with, I mean, let me back up a little bit. I started looking then at what is the difference of lockdown, right? So it's different people. It's a different amount of time that I'm spending in the building. It's a very limited amount of people on the investigation, three of us doing an investigation, you know, versus, you know, when Paranormal State was with a very big team. And, you know, it's also, I'm pretty worn down. And, I mean, we know just our bodies, if you're not getting proper sleep, you're going to start seeing shit that's not there, right? So but even taking that away, our equipment, which isn't tired, is having evidence of something that's not there show up. You know, so for example, we'll capture a figure on camera. Well, my camera's not tired.
Yeah.
So, you know, something's happening. And then it's also even, you know, in 30 East Drive, the Black Monk House, I was scratched there. I don't know how you explain that on just being tired.
Right.
You know, so I've been looking at all these factors and I'm still kind of like racking my brain with it. What is it? Is it the specific people I'm with? Is there something that's special about when the three of us are together that something crazy happens? So I'm still trying to figure that out, but I think whatever it is, that's kind of like the good side from the paranormal perspective of it. And it's also just really cool. I mean, just on a personal level to be like, I got to live in a 1,000-year-old castle for 3 days. That's pretty cool. I got to sleep in a 1,200-year-old abbey. That's pretty amazing. you know, just having like those cool experiences like that. The bad side of it is obviously you don't get to shower. You don't get to sleep. we sleep, but it's not, I try to tell people, I'm like, it's like almost like when you sleep over at a friend's house, you probably don't get a great amount of sleep because it's not your own bed. You don't do your nighttime routine. Mm-hmm. You're probably not comfortable. Like, you know, it's all of those things. And on top of that, we do work really long hours. So we're not getting, you know, I think we're lucky if we get 4 hours of sleep a night. So that's the negative side. And then you're right. You know, you don't get to step away for a few hours and decompress. You're at work like 24/7 for 3 days. So it can be pretty stressful.
So let me ask you this, because the psychological part of this plays into effect now too, in that you're in that location, you're locked down, and you even kind of stress this yourself. You're in an old abbey, or you're there and you allow yourself to kind of be washed over with the ambiance of the place that you're in, or you may allow yourself to be awed a little bit by where it is you're at, or you take in the atmosphere of where you are. At that point, have you become influenced by maybe the backstory of what's there, or have you influenced yourself to, or opened yourself up maybe a little bit more than you would, say, if you're investigating a family's home, or you're trying to keep yourself objective to some things in a case, or you know what I'm trying to say here? Are you actually opening yourself up more than you would if you were just coming in as an objective investigator into a case where maybe you're trying to help a family?
Yeah, I think, my take on any place I go, whether it's family or not, you know, I try to just keep an open mind through skeptical lenses, mm-hmm. And it's, you know, you always want it to leave suggestibility at the door, because there's something to be said for if you expect something to happen, you're going to probably experience that. If you don't expect something to happen, you're probably going to experience that. So, you know, you really have to kind of leave all of those expectations at the door and just go in and be objective. Look for natural explanations. And I think probably the biggest difference between working with a family versus just living in a location, seeing what I can document, is obviously I have a family that I have a lot of responsibility to, you know, and that is always something that weighs very heavy on me, because, for example, I've worked with families that, we've straight up told them we don't think it's paranormal. We think they have real world issues that they really need to work on. And then you need to make sure that they're connecting with a therapist or a psychologist or a doctor, if that's what needs to be done. And, so there's a lot, I feel like it's higher stakes when you work with clients, and it's just, you're way more emotionally invested, because it's living people versus, right, you know, just yeah. strange paranormal activity going on. And there's a responsibility when you work with living people.
Absolutely. Well, with that being said, do you notice anything that does work better when you're in a location for bringing out activity? If it's not so much opening yourself up to what may potentially come your way, or being in awe of what's around you, is there something in your opinion that brings it out one way better than another?
Well, and that's kind of what I've been really trying to figure out lately, because, you know, sometimes it seems like you can do certain things and you get interactions. Other times you do those same things and you, like, at a different location and you don't get anything. So, you know, it's still definitely something I'm trying to figure out, because, again, at the end of the day, I don't have any scientific answers for what this paranormal activity is made up of, mm-hmm. or really where it comes from. You know, how it operates. And until we have those questions answered, I can never give somebody guarantees. What I've noticed, though, in the field, putting myself in there and just seeing what I experience, there is something to the work that I've done in paranormal lockdown. And again, that's kind of where it goes back to before. I don't know what the element is that's the special ingredient. You know, is it all of those elements? Is it just one of those? Is it? And so that's why I go back to that list of, is it the amount of time you spend? Is it the amount of people you have with it? Is it the type of people you have with you? Is it the fact that you're vulnerable? because you are a little sleep deprived. You know, what is that magical factor? I'm still searching for it.
I'm going to ask you kind of a weird and difficult question. So bear with me here.
Okay.
Nick comes from a show where, let's just put it this way. And I love those guys to death too, but they come from the school of provoking. And I know that, Nick doesn't seem like that type. Where do you come when it comes to provoking spirits in an investigation?
Yeah, I mean, so I think there's a respectful way to do provoking and then a disrespectful way to do provoking. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of why people get upset about it if they feel like disrespectful at all. But, you know, I think that with a caution, and again, with the utmost respect for whosoever house you're in or the history that you're trying to interact with, you know, as long as you keep that respect in mind, I don't necessarily have a problem with people provoking, because at the end of the day, we don't know what this stuff is. We have thoughts, we have schools of thoughts, we have certain patterns we've seen. We have repetition, like patterns. I'm saying the same thing there, but we have being repetitive. But we have patterns we've seen. We have case studies from the past that seem to correlate with certain things that we think the paranormal is, you know. But at the end of the day, there is no 100% concrete answers. So, you know, I kind of tell people, try everything, as long as you're being respectful, as long as you're being safe. You know, like I would never recommend somebody to just like cut open their wrist or something to make communication with something. I don't recommend any kind of hurt, like self-harm or harm to others for obvious reasons. But I mean, again, if you're in the field, you're trying to make observations, you know, you should be trying different things.
But even the root word of provoke is controversial. It's not necessarily nice. I mean, when you walk into, if you think of a spirit as a living being, I mean, not assuming that every spirit you run into is a living being, I mean, you know, obviously, but as you've put so eloquently, you don't know what it is that you're dealing with. But if we just assume that every spirit that you run into is some sort of living being or something that has been human and on this planet and someone that you've dealt with, or even some sort of human that you've dealt with, if you pretend that you're walking into somebody's home, per se, and you sit down and go to introduce yourself, and you automatically start yelling intently for some punk to come forward and address me. Well, if I just walked into somebody's home and was like, "Hey, punk, you chicken dish, blah, 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 come get me," I'd be pretty pissed at you too, if that was just even the littlest form of provoking. And not saying that you'd do that or Nick would do that, because I wouldn't think either one of you would. But even the slightest bit of provoking and being provocative is part of that. I would think that that's somewhat insulting. I wouldn't think you go to the zoo just to poke at the tigers. And I understand it's kind of the last tool in the shed that you use to get the job done.
Well, in a way, I agree with you. It's kind of like, but I go back to a couple of things, and I think you brought up some really great points. And again, I don't advocate for provoking, but I do advocate for people trying different things. As long as they're respectful, they're not harmful to you or others. You know, and of course, you have permission to be where you're at, and you know all that stuff, but I come down to, it's a couple things. Like, what is your goal in doing this work? Like, my goal is always to document the strange and unexplainable. Okay. I know people have these experiences. If we can take away 95% of those experiences as explainable experiences somehow, we still have 5% of people having things that we can't explain. I want to document that. I want to know what that is. So if somebody is telling me every time I yell at this entity, I get a reaction, well, then I'm probably going to go in and yell at the entity to try to get a reaction so I can document it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you actually brought up a really interesting thing that you said too, because you said if somebody came into your house and started yelling at you, you would flip out.
I wouldn't, so, I don't know if I'd flip out, but I wouldn't be too, I wouldn't treat it too kind. Yeah, I wouldn't, I'd be a little miffed.
But it would get a reaction from
you. Yeah, it would.
So, I mean, I think that's the, I think that's where some provoking comes into play as possibly being okay. And again, not in a disrespectful way. And I mean that not only in the sense of like to the, if you're working with a client or you're working with a very historical place, but also to people in our field, like, you know what I mean?
Right.
There's like a, there's a fine line between provoking to see what kind of reaction you get and provoking and you kind of make all of us look like, you know, not professional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, I can only speak for myself and what I've experienced. And I have noticed that there are times where if you do provoke, you will get a reaction and you will be able to document it. And again, I don't advocate for everybody to do that because I don't know, again, at the end of the day, I don't know what we're truly dealing with. But we're also making the assumption that provoking is bad because whatever we're dealing with was once a human person and they're stuck here. That could certainly be the case.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of circumstantial, I don't know if you want to call it evidence, mm-hmm. to, you know, claim that. But we also don't know. And I don't necessarily know that that's the case 100% of the time.
There's a, and I'm gonna bring this full circle back to the world of TV. And quite a few years ago, there was an incident on television. You know about it. I know about it. We won't bring it up again to spare some of our listeners. But, and I've got a little pro wrestling theater in my background too, as you know, Katrina from the indies here in Minnesota. And it could be said that, you know, for television, is there really anything that's out of bounds as far as provocation goes in your mind in television? Because in the pro wrestling world, we would say, well, you know what, we're just being a heel just to get your attention, just to get you to kind of, just to provoke you, just to get a reaction out of you. And if we got the reaction we wanted out of you, then we're drawing money. That's what we're supposed to do. So if we're doing what we're supposed to do to get a reaction out of a spirit and we've got it on film, isn't that what we're supposed to do? Is there such a thing? And is it really crossing the lines of professionalism? If I got the reaction I was supposed to get on film, is that, didn't I do my job? Is there really that line there when it comes to television as opposed to in doing an investigation in private?
Well, I mean, I can only speak for myself. For me, I don't separate the two.
Okay.
I mean, an investigation is an investigation, whether that's on television or it's not.
Okay.
I carry the same level of respect and professionalism in either situation. So, you know, I understand what you're saying, like, mm-hmm. For sure, but I, for myself, there's never a separation, and I think anybody who's worked with me would back that up. These are, even when they're on TV, they are absolutely 100% investigations first, TV second.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Because mm-hmm. I can see the argument for why somebody would say, but you know what, I've got my one shot at this. Somebody maybe who's filming a pilot or somebody who's putting something on television maybe as a one-off or you know, I got one shot at this and I gotta put this on television. And if I do this, maybe I'll get picked up for six episodes or I'll get picked up for, you know, 13 episodes, or maybe I've got my shot at, you know, at putting something on TV and they're seeing short-sighted, not seeing the entire picture. I got to do this to do something, or maybe I'm going to start my own web series, or you know how people get bit by the fame bug
yeah.
and they're not looking at the big picture. And they'll do whatever it takes, unfortunately. And I guess one thing leads to another. And so there is, to them, there's what I put on camera versus what I do on a private investigation. So I was curious what you thought about that.
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, again, it's, I don't separate the two. What you see of me on camera is what you would see of me if I came to your home to investigate. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't be in and out in 42 minutes. You know what I mean? But
that'd be extremely efficient.
I always tell people, this is the other thing I tell people about TV, is you're getting a glimpse of an investigation. You're not getting the full investigation because there's so much pre-work that goes into it. There's a ton of post-work that goes into an investigation. I'm not even talking about television. I'm just talking about an investigation. You know, there's things, and unfortunately, there's things you find out later after you've left the place, after the episode has already aired, that you're like, oh, I found this out too late. Like, you know, about the location that you're at historically or about the family or et cetera. You know, so it's always, I always feel investigations are always evolving. And so what you really see is just purely a glimpse of what we do. And, you know, I think too, like one of the criticisms that I'll hit on to kind of illustrate this point further is people say, well, a lot of times you guys are feeling things. You feel this, you feel that, blah, blah, blah. Totally understand the criticism. But again, you're getting a look into what people actually do on investigations. You know, and why do we say such things? It's because when we interview eyewitnesses, a lot of times they talk about how they felt in the moment mm-hmm. or how they feel in the building and why that makes them uncomfortable. So I call it tagging. We tag those things.
Okay.
I feel uncomfortable here. I feel cold here. I don't, like, in case it becomes important to our investigation later. So, and that's what I mean. You're seeing an active investigation. It's not something that, like, we don't go in being like, okay, we know exactly what's going to happen. Let's script it out. You know what I mean? It's okay. We know the history. We know there's somebody that's having issues there. We're going to talk to these people. We're going to look up the history and we're going to go in and do an investigation. So you're seeing something as it happens, you know? And yeah, again, I don't separate the two. So I think what you see of me on television is absolutely what you would get if I came to you to do a private thing.
I have an interesting question about, you know, I look at fan criticism sometimes when they see an episode on television, and people tend to think that type of empathic evidence, I feel something here. I feel cold, or I feel, you know, like if you get some intuitive evidence, the immediate internet reaction or social media reaction is, from some people who are skeptical, is, oh, that's BS.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta ask you, is that too cynical, or is, in your opinion, or is that too cold or uncaring or unfeeling? Do you feel it's not fair?
I mean, I understand the criticism, to be honest with you. I completely understand it. In a lot of instances, I agree with it. But that's why I remind people, you're not seeing everything that we do, and you're not, I think a lot of times some of those criticisms, they don't understand exactly what the goal is of the paranormal field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like, listen, for me personally, I'm not out to prove ghosts are real or ghosts are fake. I'm out to document these strange experiences that people have because I know they happen.
Mm-hmm.
And what frustrates me is that we're so eager. If somebody says to you, I saw a figure in this hallway, okay, they're crazy. Next person comes to you, I saw a figure in this hallway. Must be something in the room. Third person, I saw a figure in this hallway. And it's this pattern of people consistently brushing it off. And it makes me wonder, why are we so eager to brush people off when they have these experiences? Even if it all turns out that we have a neurological problem,
mm-hmm.
and that's what's causing these experiences, shouldn't we know? Shouldn't we be exploring why that is? And that's kind of, you know, that's where a lot of my passion comes through, because there are documented cases of people having this stuff for hundreds of years all over the world, very credible people. And we are so willing to brush it off to the side. And I'm not saying embrace everything you hear. I've heard so much bullshit in my time in this field, to mm-hmm. be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it maliciously, some of it just because people don't know, you know, or they mistakenly identify something as paranormal, you know, but mm-hmm. I think, you know, keep that skepticism, keep it, because we need it in order to drive this field forward. At the same time, though, don't be so skeptic where you're brushing off things that could be important. And that's why you do things like the tagging. because when eyewitnesses come forward, a lot of times they explain how they felt in the moment. They explain how they feel in a room. That's important for the work. Our bodies react to environments. We know that. When I step, for example, if I'm around EMF, high levels of EMF, I will feel it physically. And there's, if you're in the paranormal, you know there's been a lot of studies done about if you're in a place with high EMF, are those places reportedly haunted?
Right.
Does that mean that people are, you know, confusing the paranormal for just a very natural geological event that can happen, or a man-made event that can happen? Or do ghosts carry that with them? Or do these paranormal phenomena carry high levels of EMF when they happen? You know, there's a lot of debate going on about that. But I do know I physically react to something like that. So it's important to call that kind of stuff out, because it could be explainable or it might not be explainable.
You know, interestingly enough, you mentioned the physical reaction to EMF. What is your personal reaction to EMF? What happens to you?
Mm-hmm. Well, it varies. A lot of times it's just pressure or a sickness, like mm-hmm. a slight sickness. Mm-hmm. But normally it's just like a pressure.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry. Like what? Go ahead.
Oh, no. No. That's all I was really going to say.
Okay. I know when we, a few years back, Dave and I were investigating First Avenue here in Minneapolis. And down in the basement, they have a transformer, an electrical transformer. And this thing has not been sealed or looked at by XL Energy in quite a few years because it's leaking. And you go down there, even with a regular millimeter or a higher form of electrical meter, and this thing leaks at about 64 or 65. I mean, it's really pumping out EMF. I mean, it's I went, woo boy. And I was standing probably about 3 feet away from it when I got the 64 or 65 out of it. And, one of the guys who works there, I won't name who it was, went, oh yeah, that. And I went, oh yeah, that. And he goes, yeah, have you had your kids yet? And I went, ooh, no, no. And he goes, yeah, mm-hmm. I wouldn't stand too close to that if you were hoping to have them. And there was a puddle of water. I kid you not, Katrina, this puddle of water was sitting right next to this transformer.
And I thought, oh my God.
Yeah. Like, and this puddle of water was probably a good 2 feet in diameter. I thought to myself, boy, if you ever want to have an accident as an employee at First Avenue, that'd be the place to have it. It was just plain scary. But I thought to myself, and you know, one of the places, funny enough, that they see, and they see, you know, they have different spirit sightings within First Avenue, including the restrooms. And this was the old Greyhound station in Minneapolis. But one of the places they have them is down in that basement where, you know, and they use it as a storage area. But smack dab, maybe 3 feet away from this transformer, is where they keep claiming they feel this presence down in the basement, or they feel eyes watching them, or they've seen a presence down in this basement. Well, of course, you know, this thing is pumping out a huge amount of EMF, and I'm surprised it's not twisting your brain in knots.
You know? Yeah. And that's the thing. People also feel very anxious around high levels of EMF.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the reasons why, well, I mean, I've seen it before in articles where people speculate, is that one of the reasons why people are so anxious and depressed these days, because we're consistently being exposed to EMF.
Mm-hmm.
That's not natural, you know, from Wi-Fi, from cell phones, from televisions, all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, let's take a break for a feature of ours as we stop talking about the scariness of EMF and what it could potentially do to your body, to the scariness of a small story here from one of our listeners. It's time now for Theater of the Mind.
Today's Theater of the Mind, The Night the Grinch Got Scrooged, a true holiday haunting by Patty Phillips.
Everyone has a favorite Christmas memory. Usually it deals with getting that one desired present, getting engaged, falling in love, or something along that line. Mine? Well, it's a little more unusual. I was about 10 years old, and at that age, like many of my classmates, I had begun questioning many Christmas traditions. It seemed other kids in my class had lost the magic belief in Christmas, and I was about to throw in the towel myself. After all, I didn't want to be the only kid in school that still acted like a kid. I wrestled with my thoughts and concerns for weeks leading up to Christmas, and my father had picked up on the fact that I was not acting myself, that I seemed distant and distracted. He continued to question me, trying to get me to open up to him about my thoughts. I eventually relented, early in the day, on Christmas Eve. Dad sat back quiet for a while, and I could see the deep look of contemplation written all over his face. He knew, as did I, that the next few moments would, or could, change my childhood. This was something he was not willing to rush headlong into. Finally, he lifted his hands behind his head, knitting his fingers and elbows out as he cradled his head in his hands. Then he let out a sigh.
Well, kiddo, Christmas is what we make of it. I personally believe and always will believe in the spirit of Christmas. It's much more than Santa, presents, elves, and cookies. It's really about love, laughter, and family. Where all of that exists, there'll always be the magic of Christmas.
He paused with another sigh and then continued.
I cannot give you all the answers you're looking for. This is something that every living person on the planet has to decide for their own. Every year Christmas comes and every year it goes, and for the next 11 months we're left with wonderful memories. Personally, I choose to believe in that, and I look forward to it every year. And to this day, I've never been let down or disappointed.
With that, he leaned forward, kissed my forehead, and whispered,
I love you.
And just like that, he was gone. I wish I could say his comments brought me peace or confidence, one way or another. However, it didn't. It is only now, in hindsight, I could see how difficult that conversation was to have. One of the first moments you watch your kids begin to slip from childhood. I went to bed with a mixed rush of excitement and nervous energy. Had my talk affected how Christmas would unfold going forward? I didn't know what to think, and spent the better part of the night fretting, until I heard a noise. Someone was walking around downstairs. I creeped out of my room, unsure of what I might see, hoping it would be Santa placing presents under the tree when I got to the banister. I bent down and peered down into the living room. From this angle, I could see the beautifully lit Christmas tree, piles of presents that had slowly built up over the weeks leading to Christmas Day, and new gifts surrounding the tree as well, gifts that had not been there before I went to bed. My heart began to rush. Santa had come! Then, I saw something that paralyzed me in terror. A man was in our living room, slinking around, picking up gifts and sliding them into a sack. I wanted to call out, to run to the safety of my parents' room that was only a mere 6 feet from me. I could hear the sound of my parents locked in harmonious snoring. Maybe if I just laid here quietly, he would take what he wanted from under the tree and leave. I watched as he continued to cherry-pick the gifts below, shaking some gently as though hoping to divine what treasure might be hidden within. Some he would put back down, others made their way into his bag. I fought back tears that threatened to burst out of my eyes at any given moment, and did my best to stifle a small sob, but it came out, louder than I had hoped. The invader turned to face the sound, and his eyes met mine. I could feel my heart stop as he began to creep in my direction and headed to the bottom stair to begin his ascension. That is when I saw something I will never forget. Like a gust of wind, a white, cloudy form rushed past me, making its way down the stairs and slammed hard into the crook, sending him crashing backwards into our Christmas tree. The smoky cloud continued to push and shove this guy every time he tried to stand, every time he crashed down hard. He cried out at one point.
Hey, what the hell is happening?
Finally, the form relented and allowed him to stand up. He reached for the bag of goodies he had been packing, and the smoke enveloped him, and he let out a horrified yelp as he disappeared into the haze. As quickly as it had surrounded him, it pulled back after his yelp. He bolted for the front door, this time tripping over the end table and eventually making his way out the door. And to the bitter cold, but I guess seemingly safe outside. With all the commotion, my folks sprang from their bed, as the old poem says, to see what was the matter. I laid there, unable to speak, and I watched the cloudy white mass head right for the fireplace and just vanish. My folks asked what had happened. I tried to explain as they called 911 and informed the authorities of the break-in. Christmas was saved that night. I cannot say by who, but it was a power and a force unlike anything I had ever seen. And as it made its exit, it appeared to disappear up my chimney. Take from this story what you will, but that night, I believe I truly witnessed the spirit of Christmas.
Beyond the darkness.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio on a Sunday. This is Beyond the Darkness. Our guest is straight from the land of television, from Destination America, and the third season of Paranormal Lockdown. Katrina Weidman is with us, and it's our pleasure to have her here with us this Sunday as we're talking a little bit about season three. And you know, on season three, and I've seen on your social media, Katrina, that you've been talking about some of the new equipment, actually, that's not only bettering the field, but you're getting a chance to kind of get your hands on some of this stuff, aren't you, on the show this year?
Oh, yeah. We use a lot of different equipment from different engineers, different people that are just enthusiasts that, you know, wanted to try to build some things. So we try pretty much anything, really, to see. Kind of it's like throwing the spaghetti at the wall. You want to see what sticks.
So tell me a little bit about some of your favorite stuff of the new stuff that's come out. What are you using that you've really taken to?
Well, I'll tell you, when we were in England, one of the pieces of devices we use is the Geoport and Geobox. It's built by George Brown. And it works in various ways. It uses like radio frequencies, electromagnetic waves, and EMF fluctuations. And you know, the thought is it's kind of like a ghost box, but just a little bit different. And, you know, the thought is that it scans through all these radio frequencies and that if anything intelligent is there, it can use those, manipulate them and talk to you, kind of like a telephone to the dead. Right. Mm-hmm. And now I think something that isn't very well known about me is I'm a believer that strange things happen that we can't explain. But I'm very skeptical of our terms, our definitions, and the equipment we use, right?
Good, okay.
And not to say I'm somebody who's like, that's all bitch, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But I keep that skeptical lens until I have, basically until we like 100% have proof of all of this. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I always kind of keep that lens on with equipment as well. You mm-hmm. know, I use them, I play with them, see what results we get, that kind of thing. But I'm always very cognizant of the fact that maybe it's not what we think it is, mm-hmm. you know? And anyway, so we were using the Geoport in England. It was like England's oldest prison, I think. And we were having, I swear to God, Tim, we had for over an hour intelligent communication with something knocking in this room. Hmm. And it was, you know, and at first when it started happening, it was like, okay, well, there's got to be something in the room, right? Like something natural.
Right.
It is a little like square room. It was built in the 1940s during World War II by the Americans to kill basically American soldiers that had gone AWOL. So American soldiers that were in prison, there were like 18 men that died in this prison that were American soldiers. I believe only 16 were hanged, though. So the other two were shot. And so it's this little square room, and on the bottom of this room, it's just like another little square room, because that's where the bodies would drop down into, right? Mm-hmm. So on the outside, it's brick, just a brick room. And it has a floor in the middle and then a room underneath. So we heard this knocking. I actually checked downstairs to make sure nobody was there. Nobody was downstairs in the hanging, dropping room.
Okay.
It was just the three of us. And this knocking would move throughout the entire freaking room.
Hmm.
And we set it up. I said, knock twice for yes, once for no. I swear to God, for over an hour, we had intelligent responses to every single question we asked.
Whoa.
And yeah, it was like one of the most bizarre experiences I've ever had. And so basically what we got off of this, you know, experience was that it was a female who was placed into prison for stealing medicine for her child, and that she died there. And at the same time, we were running the geoport, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe little things came through, but nothing really substantial. And this is what sold me on the geoport, because towards the end of this exchange, and we're telling her, use all the energy you can, you know, take everything from us. We get this woman's voice come through on the geoport, and I swear to God, clear as day, it's like, I'm talking to you right now. And it almost, to me, it almost sounded like she had a little bit of an accent.
Okay.
This woman's voice, and she says, I don't want to die.
Oh.
Craziest thing. And, you know, to me then, I'm thinking, okay, like, I have no idea how to explain that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the geoport is not designed. I mean, the way it works, you shouldn't be hearing full sentences like that come through.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't be as clear as that.
Right, right.
You know, so, and that coupled with the fact that we were having this intelligent communication with knockings for over an hour, I don't know what to make of that other than, I mean, completely unexplainable. And so that really kind of sold me with the geoport, that there's something special about the way that's made.
Well, considering too, when, with the old, recorders, we're always told too, with recorders, that the spirits only have so much energy to push out so many words, and you're lucky if you get this, or you get a certain phrase, or if you get out, you know, that's a lot for them to push out. That's a pretty big phrase, especially for the geoport, I would think.
It is. It was the whole sentence. I don't want to die.
That's amazing.
It was pretty crazy.
So what else are you using this season that you're partial to other than the geoport? I mean, the geoport sounds pretty impressive.
The geoport was pretty amazing. Yeah. And George is an engineer, too. That's the thing. He's an electrical and mechanical engineer.
You know, that's what's killing me is we have more and more engineers that are entering the field and that seem to be contributing practical solutions to the field. And it blows my mind. And it has to do a lot with EMF or RF or And they work along that spectrum. And I don't know why it's that spectrum that they're focused on, or even video. Video has come into it, too, along with the SLS camera. It's that realm that they're sticking to. And no one's really seemed to, I don't know, change the game on a different frequency. I guess because we think, you know, auditorily and think with our senses. And I don't know why, you know, where else you would focus, but to me, it when I think, well, how else would you, you know, how else would you apply that? And everyone's like, why? Where else would you go, Tim? I think to myself too, you know, when people were thinking of how you bridge that gap or how you cross that veil. Well, of course, you think, you have to communicate with an instrument. But, you know, a while back, I believe it was Bill Chappell was trying to do something with gauging how psychics would how exactly their brains worked when it came to, you know, how they transmit energy to communicate with the other side and break the veil. And he thought a lot of it had to do with PK energy, and he was trying to figure out what exactly, and again, another electrical engineer at work, trying to figure out what type of energy that was, you know, and not necessarily, and he was working, trying to figure out, and he said, you know, it had nothing to do with RF at the time. It had nothing to do with EMF. And he was working on trying to figure out what type of energy that was. And to me, I found that fascinating because it was focusing on a different spectrum. If you know where I'm trying to go with this, I know I'm stammering a little bit, but it's, to me, I find that fascinating, trying to find that wavelength. It's like we're a hair off on everything. I mean, like we're trying, we're there, we're on that precipice, but we're not quite there yet. So when you say, you know, like with the geoport, you got that much. It's like trying to tune in Tokyo on a shortwave radio, you know? We're close. We're hearing little bits and pieces, but we're not quite there. So I'm sorry, I cut you off with the other piece of equipment that or the other pieces of equipment that you're using this season on Paranormal Lockdown.
Yeah, I mean, we just had the episode air Higgins Port School. I thought this was really interesting. We were using just light panels, and there's something we've used before, but we had again intelligent communication. I haven't seen the episode actually. So I don't know how long it lasted in the episode. I think it was just a couple minutes, but we were having intelligent communication with something for, I would estimate about 20 minutes,
okay.
15 to 20 minutes using the light panels. So we set it up as, you know, anytime the answer is yes, make the light plant panels go off, something like that. And we would ask these questions and these light panels would go off. And the way they work is like something with mass has to go over them.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So, we also, at the same time, though, we also captured a shadow figure.
Really?
And I saw this with my own eyes, like straight on. I saw the shadow figure. Nick saw it, too. And the shadow figure, it appeared like three times. And on the third time, we caught it.
Really?
And yeah. And now I've always seen shadows out of the corner of my eye, that kind of thing. I've never seen one like fully dead on where I'm like, I have no way to explain that. This was the first time that happened. So I don't know. I don't have, unless it, I mean, like, you know, you rack your brain 1,000 times trying to figure out what could that be. It's got to be something explainable. It has to be, it's got to be an explanation for it. I don't have one at this point for that.
See, I have. I've seen them a couple of times full on, but they've run from me.
Oh.
you can ask Chip. Chip, I took Chip and Tina Mattingly on a shadow person chase in Waverly Hills. It was funny. Back when I could run. Yeah, but it was, and Tina was like, I've never seen him run before. And I'm like, now you have, woohoo! Seeing that, you're right, seeing them up close is a little unnerving. It's, and you don't know what to think of it, and you don't, yeah, you just, It's like the first time you see an exotic animal at the zoo. It's surreal. You know, you're like, I've heard of it. And, you know, you might have seen a recreation on TV, but there it is. And you're frozen almost.
Night you lose your virginity, right?
It hasn't happened yet. I have no idea, Katrina. What's a naked woman look like? I'm confused. But it's going to happen sometime, right? did you freeze when you saw the shadow person, or did you have that momentary moment where you
anytime I've seen something in the paranormal where it's been like a figure or shadow or anything like that, it's always that moment of like you freeze. It is very much a thing of, did I just seriously see what I think I saw? And you try, your brain does mental gymnastics to try to figure out what that is. And then, you know, since I've been in it for so long, I automatically go to, okay, let's figure out what it is. It's got to be something. And when you can't, when you come up empty handed, you know what I mean? What am I supposed to say at that point? It's unexplainable.
What's funny is when I saw the one at the Palmer House, I had two investigators walk in behind me and just basically said, holy ish, did you see that? And I'm like, yeah, I did. But they had cameras in their hand and they went running after it and started snapping photos. I'm like, good luck to you on that. You know, you're like, you know, if it ran and you haven't snapped anything off yet, you're not going to snap anything now.
Right.
You know, but yeah, you have that. I think you all have that moment where you have to stop and the brain has to process what exactly it is I'm looking at. And in that moment, if you have to take that moment to think, you've lost the moment already. And I think that's why evidence sometimes is so fleeting in the paranormal. When you say, well, if you don't already have cameras running, or if you don't already have something running, whether it be video or if you have, you know, camera on a timer or whatever, you're going to lose it, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just that sort of thing. Now, let me ask you this, because, you know, you have been doing this for quite a while now. I feel like we're two old hands sitting here swapping stories. you've mentioned now that you do have that believer side of you, yet you do have that dash of skeptical in you, or more than that dash of skeptical in you. Do you feel like as you get deeper into this, having done the run on Paranormal State, now you're three full seasons into Paranormal Lockdown, which side is winning with you? Do you feel that you've opened yourself up more, that the more you have these experiences, is the believer side winning in you? Or do you feel that you've become more of a hard skeptic?
It's actually both.
Yeah.
And which is interesting. So I'm trying to think of the best way I can explain this. I have had way more unexplainable experiences the more I go into this field. So I have no doubt in my mind that people have experiences that we don't know how to explain yet using the current science we have and understand today. I believe when specifically, because right, the paranormal means more than just ghosts and shadows and all that stuff, means anything science cannot explain in layman's terms. When we're specifically talking about ghosts, shadows, spirits, apparitions, any poltergeist, anything that goes into that category specifically. When I first started out, you know, I believe pretty much what everybody else does, is that a ghost is something or someone who died, they came back, and now they're interacting with us. I've gotten to the point where I believe all of those types of phenomena work on a spectrum. So I don't just think, for example, if I go into a house and I experience seeing a shadow figure, and I also experience watching a chair move, does that mean that's the same type of phenomena as far as what's causing it, i.e. is that someone who's died and come back? I don't believe that. I believe there are multiple things going on, and I don't believe all of it is the afterlife. It's a possibility that none of it is the afterlife. It's, you know what I mean? It's a possibility that all of it could be the afterlife. So I've become very skeptical with what is accepted as the paranormal at this point in regards to that specific category of, you know, ghosts and spirits, apparitions, all that stuff. So I believe that things happen. I know we have experiences we can't explain, but I'm extremely skeptical of the terms and definitions we use, and I'm skeptical of some of the equipment that we use. So that's kind of where I'm at with it now. I think for me, it's probably ever evolving. If you interviewed me in 10 years, I might have a completely different answer. But I think that's part of this kind of the challenge of working in a field that is not proven by science yet. You know what I mean?
No,
it's always going to be changing.
I think you got a very healthy attitude about it. You know, I think we have a lot of people in the field that are very quick to take an instrument that was once used to measure low-line EMF leakage out of a wire and say, I got a ghost.
Right.
You know, it's,
yeah.
It's, you know,
and that's the thing. It's all fringe, you know, so you try different things. And so, you know, one of the things that I consistently hear people say, and I agree with it, they're like, you're not using any scientific method.
Right.
Yeah. There's really not a whole lot of that going on. I think the point where we're at right now in the field is that we're really trying to document these things that people experience. You know, 20, 30 years ago, not everybody had access to a camera. Not everybody had access to an audio recorder.
True.
And we're at a really interesting place right now where a lot of people can just go out and see what they experience and be able to document those experiences. so I think that's kind of the first step, right? We need to be able to make an observation. Mm-hmm. So then we can go in and start coming up with theories, start coming up with, you know, thoughts that we can test. And I don't know how you get there without jumping into the field with both feet and seeing what happens to you if you put yourself in those situations. You know, and again, I'm not advocating to put yourself in any kind of dangerous situation, but for example, like, kind of what I mean is, when I have a client come to me and say, I saw the shadow of a man, I was tapped on my shoulder, et cetera, et cetera, they're not looking for a ghost. They're just going about their daily routine experiencing this. So I really think there's something to be said about just putting yourself in a haunted location or an alleged haunted location and seeing what happens to you. Because the more time you spend in there, you're just upping the probability of experiencing something.
That's true. That's true. I think the longer,
you know,
yeah, you're right. The longer, the more apt you are to see. Let me ask you this then, because it seems now you've developed this, as I term it, a healthy, some people may email or say, you know what, Tim, I think you're being a cynic, but you seem to have developed this healthy attitude towards what it is you're seeing, or maybe you've turned the corner a little bit and become, some people may say, a little more jaded. Is that fair?
No, I don't think, people are going to say what they're going to say.
True.
You know what I mean? I can't control anybody's thoughts or words about me, really. You know, for me, I don't think it's jaded. I think it's just realizing that there might be way more going on to it than what we're told. I mean, we're conditioned, and it's a really long conversation. I'll try to make it as short as I can. But when I meet somebody who's skeptical, mm-hmm. like diehard skeptic, does not believe this stuff happens at all.
Well, that's a sin.
I'll give you an example of a conversation I had. And I've told this story in some of my lectures because I think it's really interesting. I was sharing a cab with a woman and we were going to Dragon Con. And her husband is an author of like science fiction. She was the sort of tagging along. And she's like, and what do you do? And I was like, did I tell you? Because sometimes I lie. Sometimes I don't tell people. You know, just because I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to get, like, the look. I'm going to get the lecture. I'm not in the mood for this. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, ah, so I told her. and she gave me this look. And I should have listened to my instinct because I knew she was going to give me the look.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave me the look like, oh. Like, you know, like, oh, God, one of you stupid people who do this stuff, right? And I was like, oh, you don't believe in ghosts? And she's like, no, I do not. And I was like, well, do you believe that we have everything figured out? And she looked at me like it was the first time she'd ever thought of that.
Hmm.
And she's like, well, no, I don't. I'm like, okay, great. So this is where my job comes in. And what I found, and that was kind of the conversation that really kind of it clicked for me.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the skeptics I meet, they don't have an issue with activity happening that we can't explain. They have an issue with the word ghost.
Right.
They have an issue with the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to start thinking, well, why is that? Ghost is such a loaded word, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think it's very much tied to people's religious upbringings. Even if you're not religious, that's a form of, you know, your belief system. And I think, again, ghost terminology is someone who's lived and died and come back, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I've kind of come to hate the word ghost to explain the stuff that is going on, because I don't think it covers everything. And, you know, so I don't know that I would say I'm jaded. I think it's just more looking at this from a more objective stand, a more objective place. Than I was ever before.
So then, my friend, let me load up the question even more then. Knowing that, let me ask you about, if you hate that word ghost, are you, and having been on Paranormal State, which really, that show really did have a religious slant. I mean, in that, it was really, you had the undercurrent of Ryan's religious journey, really.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think you were all dragged along, and this is my slant on, or my take on the show, you all were really dragged along on Ryan's religious journey. on that show. That's essentially what it was. You sure the show was helping families and different people out on their as far as investigations, but really there's this undercurrent of Ryan's religious journey in there as well. And I'm not expecting you to comment on that. You don't have to comment on that.
Well, but I will comment on that though, because I don't think that's accurate. I think as far as the television show goes, that's how it looked. And I'll agree with that,
Okay. That
it looked like it was Ryan's religious journey, but that was not what PRS was about. We all had our own, you know, work that we did. We all had our own missions.
Right.
And when it came to working with clients, you know, that was our mission. It was helping these people that had nowhere else to turn. Ryan is religious. I mean, at least when I knew him, he was religious. And that was that played into a big part of his work that he did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can make that assessment about many different people in the field. You know, and to various, whatever they practice, there's a lot of people that bring that into the work with them. And so I don't think we were dragged along to his religious journey, but I think there were episodes for sure that it made it seem that way.
Well, I'm just saying overall, that's the way they made it look on the series.
Right.
I'm not saying that's what the mission statement of PRS was. It's just that I think in the overall tone of the series, that's how the producers made it look. Like, here's this group that's going out and helping people. Oh, by the way, here's the second thread of the series is this. This is the hook of the series,
sure.
is Ryan's religious journey to try and hook you in to keep you coming back, which they didn't need, in my opinion. That's my opinion. Because I felt that, you know, the stories told themselves and there were compelling stories that were being told.
Yeah.
There's my soapbox.
Ryan's stuff was also really happening at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, he grew up having that. I mean, this was why he started PRS. There were some weird things going on as far as, like, you know, him having, people always joke about it, the demon chasing him. You know, that stuff was really happening to him. So, I mean, I understand why they put it in there, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
But in there, and to me at least, having grown up Catholic, been an altar boy, had my crisis of faith and all that other stuff nobody needs to hear about, it was intriguing to me to see that here's this guy who's also having this, you know, this religious journey and dealing with the paranormal. And okay, it sucks me in for a little bit, but you know, I don't need to be reminded every episode. But again, that's my own soapbox stuff. I'm more interested in the stories that are being told on each individual episode and in the about the, you know, characters and everybody else who are involved in these investigations. But with that being said, and again, I'm taking the long way around on this question. With that being said, there was a lot of talk of good and evil, angels and demons. That was huge in those threads of stories, and that was being thrown around a lot in that series.
Yeah.
And you were surrounded a lot with that. Probably now less so in Paranormal Lockdown, although on Ghost Adventures, Nick was very much so surrounded by that sort of stuff as well. So I would ask you this question, now that the two of you are together on Paranormal Lockdown, what are your beliefs on real evil and good and evil and angels and demons?
Yeah.
Has that been tamped down, or what is your outlook? I'm not going to shade the question anymore. What is your outlook on that sort of stuff?
So there's a couple things in there that I'll comment on.
Okay.
One, because there's a couple different parts, so I'm trying to, like, think about it. I'm like, okay, you just put a lot on me.
I did, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's good. I'm glad you did, because I think it's really important. Number one, PRS, there was a lot of religious overtones and undertones in that series. And there's a very good reason for that. When people are having experiences, when they call you up, when they email you and say, I need help with something, they bring their religious aspects to it. For example, an atheist will tell me a completely different story than a Catholic when they both had the same experience.
Mm-hmm.
We need to understand how they view the paranormal. You know, because that helps you break down the experience to hopefully you can understand what really happened.
Okay.
You know, for example, if somebody sees if they're a Catholic and they see a chair move, they're going to tell me it's a demon 9 times out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that's probably not the case.
Right.
You know? So let me go in, let me check it, but, you know, let's talk in those terms so we can understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's kind of like, let's talk the same language, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Now, we never went to, and I want to stress this very much, especially when I work with my clients now, I very much stress this to them that, you know, we don't know everything. This is a ever-evolving field. People use certain terms and definitions, and we acknowledge those terms and definitions. And I say this to people now, when you hear me say a demon in an investigation I do with Nick, it's because Nick and I both understand what that term means.
Okay.
You know, as far as how we use it historically, right?
Sure, sure.
And there are certain patterns that follow the activity in regards to cases that would be labeled a demonic case. There are certain patterns you see in those cases with the people involved or with the locations involved. So when you start to see those patterns, you use that definition. You know, same with any other type of phenomena, poltergeist, you start seeing the patterns that historically fit those cases, you start putting that term to it. You know, but I'm also completely aware that we could have the wrong terms and definitions for all this stuff. When it comes to, like, the religious aspect of it, you know, it's hard because I think in one way you have to separate your religious beliefs to be objective.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you also have to acknowledge that you are working in a field that relies very heavily on people's religious beliefs or lack of religious beliefs. Because again, we have these terms and definitions that are kind of built off of them.
True.
You know, so it's a hard balancing act for sure. But, for me, do I believe there's good and evil? Absolutely, because we see it every day in our world.
Yeah.
Every day we see it. And evil exists in people. Take out the word evil, negative. Negative exists. We know negative people. We know negative situations. I'm sure we've all been in them. Is it so far-fetched to think that there's negative energy that could be affecting us? I mean, we know there's positive and negative energy in this world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so could that be associated with the paranormal? I think it could be. But it's also, I totally just lost my train of thought.
Well,
I
guess I'm talking that real pure evil, that demonic, you know, are you still a believer of that ultimate angelic good and that pure evil, you know, those direct contrasts.
Sure. Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I'm a believer in the possibilities of all of it. And that's kind of the point that I was making earlier, is that I keep that skepticism on of, well, what if it's not that? What else could it be? Like, let's explore this, you know, but I'm also a believer in the possibilities. Because at the end of the day, I don't have those concrete answers. Nobody does. I mean, and again, if I was a demonologist, I'd tell you something completely different. You know what I mean? If I was maybe somebody who worked with angels, I would tell you, you'd hear a completely different story out of my mouth. Where I'm at now as a paranormal investigator, somebody who's trying to come at this field objectively, is that I look at everything skeptically, or not, I look at everything with skeptical lenses.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm completely open to all the possibilities. And that comes from the fact that I've seen weird ish that I cannot explain with my very own eyes. I've had weird stuff happen to my body that I can't explain. I have seen footage of weird stuff I can't explain when I was standing right in the room. You know, so something does happen. It's just, you know, do we have the correct terms and definitions? I don't know the answer to that.
Let me ask you a complicated question, yet it's got, I think, a relatively simple answer. I know that seems like a riddle.
Okay. Yeah.
As someone who's worked with Lorraine Warren, is faith something you should bring into an investigation like a sword, or something you should keep close to your side like a shield?
Wait, what did you ask?
Is faith something you should bring into an investigation like a sword, or keep close to your side like a shield?
I guess it really depends on the people. For example, when I'm working with clients, a lot of my clients are, you know, faith-based in something at least. And when they're asking for, you know, can you get rid of this thing in my house? It's always, you know, I never guarantee anybody anything. I can't do that. But I have found the pattern I have seen in the past is that when people use whatever they believe in the most as protection, so whether that's a blessing by a Catholic priest, having a talisman with you of crystals or herbs or oils, doing a ritual within your faith, whatever that is, whatever you believe in the most, that seems to get the most results. And then you can speculate on why that is. I mean, there's a thousand different ways to take that. But, you know, I that's what I have seen works best. So I think if you're going into an investigation, if that's what you want, protection, then, you know, yeah. But, I mean, it's I guess, like, that's even a bigger question, though, because then you can ask that of anything in life. Do you keep your faith? Do you use it as a sword or a shield? I think that's a very individual thing, and I don't know that there's a blanket statement for that. Okay. For me personally, I keep it to my side. I keep it as, I guess, maybe a shield, I guess.
A shield?
I mean, I don't know. My faith, I guess so. My faith is always with me. Even if I don't outwardly practice it, I'm very eclectic in my faith. But it's always like, I don't know, I guess I have faith every day when I do something. Mm-hmm. Just right. I mean, you have faith in yourself that your day is going to go great, or it's going to be okay, or you're going to get through something. Even if that's not like a religious thing, it's still faith.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I guess I'll ask you one more thing, because I feel like your social media audience let you down on this.
And so
I will ask you this. You were asking people online about, so I went to Bobby Mackey's. I had my first experience at Bobby Mackey's, and it just seemed like everybody let you down. They didn't ask you about Bobby Mackey. So I'm asking
so
you
how
about
was Bobby Mackey's.
Yeah. So how was Bobby Mackey's?
It was, you know, it's surreal to be there because, again, since I've worked with clients for so long, I haven't gone to a lot of these more infamous haunted locations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Bobby Mackey's is definitely interesting. There's definitely a vibe there. I did not have the, like, full-on Bobby Mackey's experience, as I like to call it, where, like, I got pushed or scratched or, like, thrown against the wall. You know, every investigator I've ever met has some, like, crazy story from there. But we did capture something, and Nick and I debated this a lot. I know on the episode that they did not make it look like it was, like, a long debate, but we actually debated this piece of evidence for a very long time. But essentially, it's like a light ball that shows up in our cameras and it moves around, and orbs is a whole different discussion, right?
Right. But it's right. Like, yep.
This one is, it's not like that. It actually stays within the camera frame for a very long time. It moves within the space. I think initially when I saw it, it looked like it was growing. But that was something else that we debated. I think it was just getting closer to one of the cameras we had set up. So it looked like it gave the appearance that it was growing. That's at least my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
When we were there, and as far as I know to this day, there's still no explanation for what that was.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So is the debate still out there?
We went over this a long time. Like, could it be a bug? Could it be somehow dust? Could it be something else in the space that we don't know about? We kept coming up empty-handed, so...
So are you two still debating it, or have you come to a compromise on the deal?
No, I mean, I think for me, it's unexplainable right now, but I don't know what it is, you know?
Well, that's an interesting way to go out there. it's nice to know that, even the best of friends get into a friendly argument every once in a while. Dave and I never argue, by the way.
No, it wasn't an argument. I mean, but we
no,
do
I'm
debate.
Kidding. I'm kidding.
Nick and I absolutely debate things all the time, and never in a cruel or like angry or fighting manner. We've never done that. It's more, I mean, it's what you do with your colleagues. You just go back and forth about.
Yeah, true. Very true.
You know what I mean?
Very true.
Yeah.
Okay, so Paranormal Lockdown airs when on Destination America?
Tuesday night. At 9 p.m.
on Tuesdays. That's Eastern time, folks. 9 p.m. Eastern time on at least as far as Katrina knows. If she if that's not accurate, then it's not her fault. She travels quite often. But check it out. Paranormal Lockdown is also available. If you go to, you can also catch up on seasons one and two if you go to the website. If you go to destinationamerica.com, you can actually catch up on some of Paranormal Lockdown's most shocking moments on the website on destinationamerica.com. So be sure to check out some of those highlights as well from seasons one and two. But check out the new season on Destination America on Tuesday nights there, and check your local listings, of course, if you're on the West Coast or here in the Midwest like we are. Also, I believe on demand, there's some systems where you could probably check out the first four episodes on demand, probably. Yes.
Yes, I think so.
Check out, too, if you've got if you've cut the cord on cable, and heaven forbid if you have, but if you've cut the cord on cable, you should probably be able to get the first four episodes on demand as well from whatever provider you have there as well. Katrina, thank you so much for joining us today, and I've enjoyed the conversation immensely, and we shouldn't go so many seasons between before we do it again.
I agree, Timmy. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you. And thank you again, Katrina, for doing this. And folks, we will be back next weekend with all new Supernatural news and with a brand new guest next weekend. For Dave Schrader, I'm Tim Dennis. Join us again next weekend for more in the best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This has been Beyond the Darkness.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.